Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
This is Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun with episode 428 of the Roughly Speaking podcast. I must say that given the latest warnings about climate change from the United Nations, the problem of workplace violence, that's the subject of today's show, seems almost, well, small in comparison. But then every problem seems small compared to what we're facing if we don't quickly change our fossil fuel burning ways. On Monday, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change described a world of worsening food shortages and wildfires, the death of coral reefs and the loss of animal species, coastlines rising, droughts intensifying, causing food shortages, mass migrations, and more global poverty. And we could see all of this, they say, as soon as 2040. So while this latest report makes me want to devote the next 100 episodes of the show and all of my future columns to climate change, because ultimately, what could matter more, today we'll look at a problem that, like climate change, we did not worry about once upon a time. Once upon a time, we would sometimes hear about a workplace shooting or mass shootings here and there, but mass shootings have taken a greater and greater human toll across the country in recent years, in schools, in places of worship, in entertainment venues. The Department of Labor's most recent data on workplace shootings come from 2 years ago. In 2016, homicides accounted for 10% of all fatal occupational injuries in the United States. There were 500 workplace homicides in 2016, an increase of 83 cases from 2015. The 2016 total was the highest since 2010. Of the workplace homicides in 2016, 82% of the victims were men, 18% women. In Maryland, we've seen workplace shootings, two of them in Harford County, in less than a year. Just last month, four people, including the shooter, died at a Rite Aid distribution center. Three others were injured. The shooter, 26-year-old Snosha Mosley, took her own life. The Harford County Sheriff says she was suffering from acute schizophrenia. A year ago this month, a man named Rady Prince was charged with shooting five co-workers at Advanced Granite Solutions in Harford County. Three of his victims died. Rady Prince awaits trial in that case, but he's already been sentenced to 40 years in prison for shooting a man in Delaware the same day. And of course, in late June in Annapolis, five people, four of them journalists, were killed in a shooting at the offices of the Capital newspaper, which is part of the Baltimore Sun Media Group. One of the victims, reporter Wendy Winters, rose from her desk to meet the attacker, who had a shotgun. According to Janelle Cooley, a survivor of the attack, Wendy Winters charged forward holding a trash can and recycling bin and shouted at the shooter. Cooley and others are certain Winters saved lives with her heroic action and sacrifice. Those who knew Wendy Winters say her actions reflected her personality. But according to a story by reporter Danielle Ohl in the Capitol, weeks before the June 28th shooting, Wendy Winters had taken active shooter training at her church, where a police officer presented the options: run if you can, hide if you can, fight only if you must. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration has no specific standards for workplace violence, but it does provide some guidance to employers. If you follow the links in the notes with this episode of Roughly Speaking, you can read OSHA's advice on workplace violence prevention. I had occasion recently to watch and take part in a self-defense training conducted for a Baltimore business by a former Green Beret and Under Armour security official named Akil Bey. A retired master sergeant who served in the military for 22 years, Akil Bey was director of global security and safety for Under Armour. In that role, he developed emergency action and communications plans for thousands of UA employees. After a few years at Under Armour, Akil Bey founded his own self-defense training company called Tailored Defense Training Group in Fells Point. He offers a range of services from fundamental self-defense to firearms training. In today's episode, he talks about what he does, but I was interested specifically in getting his thoughts on workplace safety. I first spoke to Akil just a day after the shooting at the Rite Aid Distribution Center in Harford County. So when you hear about these things, I mean, you probably react like the rest of us do. You know, you're appalled that it happens. It's a horrible thing that happens. But then you must also wonder, like, what kind of security was in place? What kind of safety did the workers in this place have?
I did. But I also thought about the precursors and all the indicators that were existing that people probably ignored or explained away. Security is great. I think it's definitely required to serves as a deterrent. But in some situations, I mean, there are other things that can be done besides relying on an uniformed individual to provide services, which are identifying threats, identifying any types of hazards, and calling them out and reporting them. So, yeah, of course, we wonder what kind of security they had, but, you know, we also worried about what signs were missed prior to the attack.
I think a lot of workers, like myself included, probably think, well, we have security, we have swipe cards, but still, you're in the workplace, and this violence has erupted all over the country in different places, including workplaces. So you wonder, what can I do myself, or what should I be thinking about? Should I be thinking about this at all and not enjoying my life and getting my work done?
I think it's a responsibility at all levels. If you are an entry-level person, or, you know, you're not in a management position, you should be focused on doing your job. But you should also develop a relationship with your coworkers. Get to know your coworkers. Get to understand basically what makes them tick. And I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, just get to know each other. You guys talk. You know, if your coworker is having a hard time, maybe you can talk to them. Maybe you can help them out, or at least point them in the right direction to get them help that they may need. If you're in a management position, it's even more important that you understand your employees, understand what makes them tick, why they're showing up late, what's affecting their performance. If they were a strong performer, but all of a sudden they're missing deadlines or any type of shift in their performance, you know, don't just write them up or pink slip them. Try to identify what's going on. Maybe it's something that you can prevent or help, because that's where this thing happens. We tend to fail to remember the human factor of things. We focus on business, and we remove that human element, and that's when you have these issues and you miss these signs.
I think some people are reluctant, are they not, to like report a coworker? Yeah. You see some behavior that's a little disturbing, maybe, or you hear something, and then you say, I'm not sure, I don't want to be the one that does that. You know, you see somebody slam their fist down on a desk because they're having a bad phone call. In my business, it could be a frustrated newspaper reporter who's not getting an answer from a public official, but it could also be a personal relationship being exposed there with a fist coming down. But would I report that to a supervisor? I guess
at the end of the day, it's better to earn a side of caution. But at the same time, you can maybe just have a conversation with that individual directly without reporting them. Hey, how's it going? Hey, Dan. Hey, you seem pretty upset. Everything okay? Yeah. You know, just being personable. I think that's one thing that we lose as well. Just personal relationship, getting to know. That's part of being in the military that I miss, is the camaraderie. You know, if I know my guys, I know my teammates. You know, I know if they're upset, I know their habits, and we hang out. You know, I probably spent more time with them than I did with my own family. I mean, that's a teammate. They're part of your family, and you don't see a lot of that in corporate America. It's just, I'm just here to work. I'm here to, and I want to get out of there. And that's part of the strategy, right? That's part of security right there, right? Knowing your teammates, knowing your employees, knowing your coworkers. So, you know, that's better than buying guns and hiring security, right? So understanding the human terrain and people, and just talking and getting to know each other. And I think we're missing a lot on that. And I guess the fix or the answers to make us feel better is hire someone in a uniform. You know, put an officer with a gun on the front door, and we don't have to worry about being nice to each other or being personal to each other, because if anything happens, that guy with the uniform is going to come save the day. And that's not the way to go. No one wants to report a coworker. You know, maybe they're overreacting, or, you know, they're just scared. Sometimes they just don't want to get involved. And just like I said, just speaking to the individual, trying to help on your level, and then also kind of refer them maybe to an outside agency or outside help, you know. But definitely, you know, if there's some occurrences that you may want to report to your supervisory staff, and let them make that determination. Don't explain it away at your level when it could have been a key indicator or a key situation or circumstance that would prevent a tragedy. So a lot of people don't want to get involved. You know, they feel it may not be their business, but unfortunately it is everyone's business. And that's how we become safe, not by relying on technology such as ID cards, like swipe badges or security officers. I mean, employees see way more. They're around it way more than any uniformed personnel, and they have to be the eyes and ears.
So you're talking about the importance, the value of personal relationships in the workplace.
Definitely.
But you can't be everywhere. I mean, if you work in a big place with lots of people, right?
So that's exactly what I'm saying. So we tend to outsource our personal safety to someone in a uniform, right? There's usually one or two, but there are hundreds and thousands of employees. They can't be everywhere, but every employee can. And that's why having those relationships, we become a force multiplier. We become the eyes and ears of the security officers, just like the security officers are the eyes and ears of the police department. I call it total security awareness. Everyone plays a part, not just someone in a uniform. Everyone in the facility plays a part.
I've worked for the Baltimore Sun for 42 years. This year was the first time I ever had to sit through, or was asked to sit through, a security briefing, a discussion with the people in charge of the security for our company, what measures are in place, and what we're supposed to do in case of an active shooter. In part, this is because of what happened at the Capital newspaper in Annapolis, which is one of our sister papers, but I went all those years without having to do that. Don't you think more and more workplaces are having these orientations?
I think there is an increase. I believe there should be more briefings, and unfortunately, that's just the way lives are going. Years ago, there were no fire drills, and people were casualties of fire. So they started implementing fire drills, right? So how many casualties are there of a fire now? Hardly any, if any, because everyone understands what that process is like, and we drilled it from as little as kindergarten and up. And now the dynamic has shifted to active shooter, active violence, because that is a threat. You know, it's a credible threat, and it's something that needs to be planned and prepared for. So I'm glad to hear that you're attending these security briefings, and you can never attend enough of them. And it's not something that, okay, I'll go, or I went to it last year, I'm good. No, understand that the threats have changed and they evolve, and you should attend every security meeting that you can, because you simply can't get enough, and it's always helpful to understand what your actions are and what the actions of the responders are going to be.
I went to a concert earlier this year and thought about where the exits are. I can't remember ever going to a concert and having that on my mind.
Sure. I mean, you're spot on with that. I mean, if you're not looking for that exit, that alternate exit, then you're behind the power curve, quite frankly, because, I mean, everyone comes in the front entrance, and during an emergency, it's an automatic response for you to try to exit in the same way you came in. So imagine a concert or, you know, whatever venue that you're attending, hundreds of people are trying to use that one funnel, that one exit. And it's important that you understand what the alternate exits are. Maybe they're in the back, you know, just look for the exit sign. You don't have to, sometimes you don't necessarily have to go up and walk to it, but at least have a path to that exit. And the same thing goes for work, not just like a new place such as a concert or a movie theater, but at work as well. When I was the director of security, we ran fire drills, and you'd be surprised the amount of teammates or employees that would funnel in the front entrance, or, you know, wait near the elevator for that one stairwell. Say, hey, use these other exits. There are hundreds of them around you. And it took those drills for people to open their eyes and say, wow, I pass by this door or pass by this every day, and I never thought to use it, because we're creatures of comfort. So it's important that you do that at work, and also when you go to restaurants. It's everywhere, you know. It's just a process that you just need to get used to, and it's something that should be second nature without thought.
I think it's becoming second nature for people the more and more we see these mass shootings in the United States. You're listening to Roughly Speaking, more with Akil Bey, founder of Tailored Defense Training Group, after this message.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
I would expect companies to be lawyered up on this. If this happens enough, this has been happening enough, in workplaces, in venues, that are privately owned, the people responsible for those places may face some legal exposure if they don't take action of some kind, don't show that they are concerned about security and safety of their workers or customers.
Yeah, that whole concept of security sometimes seems like a draw on resources. It seems like it's like an insurance policy for your vehicle, right? You're paying this money every year and you don't get in an accident. And you kind of wonder, you know, do we really have to invest so much in security? And it takes an event for something to happen where everyone says, OK, yes, we need to invest in, you know, yes, we need to beef up our security. We need to buy more cameras. We need to hire more officers. So it's a fine line. But as an OSHA requirement to have procedures in place, and most companies are at least really starting to do the bare minimums that they need to do to make sure that they're in compliance, at a minimum in compliance, and whether or not it's a genuine concern for the employees or a financial thing, at least they are starting to really hone in on the basics and at least maintain the basics. The emergency response planning for the workplace, it's an area of passion for me. It's because during an emergency, it can be pretty chaotic. And when you have a plan, a guideline, it really minimizes the thought requirement, right? If you have a floor warden or a floor captain, someone that's responsible for the overall safety and welfare of their team, you know, they're thinking at a higher level. You have an assistant because, you know, you always want some kind of redundancy. They can help with accountability. They can help with notification, communicating with security and first responders and emergency responders. You have exit monitors. You have sweeper searchers. You have all these individuals. You have people that can be designated to provide first aid. You have all these different individuals within the group, and we love giving this training because we train the masses. Anyone can pick up those roles, so it's an education for everyone. Yes, you're designated as a sweeper searcher, or yes, you're designated the floor warden, but what if you're at lunch when this thing happens? What if you're on vacation or if you're working off site? So I love teaching these courses because everyone feels empowered where they can just pick up the ball and run with it and achieve the mission or accomplish the goal, which is safety and reducing that negative impact.
Is that part of the reason why you started your company? What is your customer base? What do you see as your customer base? What's the need for your service?
I understand the importance of the end user being able to perform. As a Green Beret, my skill set was half the battle. The other half was the skill set of whoever I organized, trained, and equipped to meet the objective. In corporate America, the end user is the entry level. You know, it's the everyday person that's really going to make or break the success of a response. There's just not enough security officers, not enough police officers to affect so much of an impact, but every individual in that location needs to understand what they need to do. So I formed my company to focus on the end user, to help train them, to prepare them for the speed of violence, basically. Adjust their mindset so they understand that no one's going to save them, to understand that they have to save themselves and save the person to their right or left. And that's what we focus on. So I guess that would be our primary, is that end user. And then we also cascade upward to the responders as well. But it's really important that the end user understands that, hey, I can't outsource my safety to someone in a uniform. I mean, there's just too much going on. Same here in Baltimore. I mean, our police department is under strength, and everyone is like blaming the police commissioner. There's only one person. You know, we're hundreds of officers under strength, and they can't be everywhere every time for a population of over 600,000. It's just not practical. So raising the awareness, training the everyday user, in this case the resident, to become more aware, be less of a target, help the police officers help them by doing the simple things, as such as, you know, just basic things. Don't walk around with your phone in your hand. You know, don't leave your purse on your front seat. I mean, this is just basics, but everyone wants to complain about the mayor's not doing this, and everyone plays a part. You know, it's total security awareness, and that's what we focus on.
So awareness keeps coming up. I guess we talked about that a little bit already. Is this is something you have to think about that you maybe didn't have to think about so much 10 years ago, even 5 years ago?
None of this is going to work if you're not prepared to use it. So it doesn't matter if you have a gun. It doesn't matter if you have a knife. You can sit in a tank And unless you are aware of what's going on around you, you will not be ready to use it. So, you know, there's no silver bullet when it comes to any of our training courses, but it all starts with awareness. And being aware of your environment gives you that time to make the appropriate response, whether it's running away is probably one of the best solutions, just avoiding a conflict altogether. I mean, that's how you win. And so we really harp on awareness. The physical skills and the options that we train them on are worst-case scenarios. They're backups to awareness. You can't avoid it. Now you have to defend yourself.
What drove you to this business? What made you decide to break out on your own and provide this service?
I have a passion for helping others. I can't pinpoint exactly when. I retired Green Beret, I can go overseas and contract and fight for other governments and help them. But I truly wanted to bring that passion here to the States, to the U.S., because we have enough problems here that I can affect with my skill set. So, there's no greater joy than to help someone with the preparation of their self-defense strategy. And that's where my passion is with the individual, with the small groups, you know, with the companies to help them here in the States. And that's why I started the Taylor Defense Training Group.
Do some of the customers, or like say you're working with a group of employees, which I saw you do, some of them just think it's kind of weird to have to do this at first? Or do you think after you get into the training a little bit, people understand, you know, this is not a bad idea. I probably should know how to do a few of these things. A lot of men probably assume they know what to do.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. Plenty of women, I think they're more receptive than the men, at least starting out. And the men, during the courses, you know, give them a few minutes and they start to see how much they don't know. And for the ones that are honest with themselves and really embrace the idea, I applaud them. But there are some that feel like, hey, I don't need to do this, I'm a man. But the men definitely do come around and a lot of them thank me at the end of the class or the end of the session and say, wow, I really learned a lot. If anything, they learned a lot about themselves and how much they need to train harder. So it's kind of funny that you say that because I do walk in like, okay, you know, these guys kind of size me up. I'm like, okay, well, here we go. But it's everyone walks away better than I came. So it's a good deal.
And the range of what you offer is from simple defend yourself, get away maneuvers to firearms training?
Absolutely. So again, we start off with awareness. Whatever class, even if they're just taking a gun class, I start off teaching awareness. And we do unarmed defense. We also do less lethal training, such as baton or expandable baton or chemical spray. We also offer basic firearms courses as well, such as if you want to receive a Maryland handgun qualification license or a license to wear and carry, or even home defense. We offer a package that we just tailor to combat home invasions, where we offer it in 2 days, and roughly we provide the handgun safety course on day one, let them digest that information, and then day two, we bring them together in a home environment. One of our facilities that actually looks like a home, and we train them how to defend their home. We don't start off with the guns. We start off with, again, awareness, developing that concentric layer of security, fencing, you know, outer perimeter things you can do, fencing, lighting, alarm systems, right? Types of locks and windows should be installed, and things you can do to prevent or deter someone from entering your home. And then once you're in your home, how do you build that safe room? Where's your Alamo? Where's your place of refuge that you can hide in until the police come? So we teach them how to build their safe room, and then as a last resort, use their firearm for defense.
Akil Bey is the founder of Taylor Defense Training Group in Fells Point. He is a retired Master Sergeant in U.S. Army Green Beret. He was the Director of Global Security and Safety for Under Armour. You can find a link to Akil Bey's company in the notes with today's episode. I'm Dan Rodericks at the Baltimore Sun for producers Steve Early and Hallie Miller. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by The Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes journalist John Judas, discussing his new book, The Nationalist Revival, Trade, Immigration, and the Revolt Against Globalization, a study of nationalism from its modern origins in the 1880s to its resurgence today. Tuesday, October 9th at 7 p.m. at The Ivy Bookshop. More at theivybookshop.com or call 410 877-2966.